Session number 17180.
Captain Bingley, Reel 5. You just said he gave you a book, but we didn't get the name of the book.
Oh, it was Julius Caesar, written by Shakespeare. A very dry and tedious book.
So you did the solitary confinement?
Well, I didn't do it straight away. I didn't do it straight away, actually, because all the solitary confinement centres were occupied. And it wasn't until the February that I did the solitary confinement. And I was asleep in the room when at 6 o'clock one morning, two German soldiers came along in the February and said, Oberlieutenant Bingley, I suggest, dress. And I had to dress, and I was taken to Wesleg, Wetzlar, where there was a punishment and correction centre, a Luftwaffe punishment and correction centre. Now, it was unfortunate that only a week before, the Royal Air Force had bombed a town called Dresden. You may remember Dresden, which was set
Yes.
on fire. Yeah. Well, when they did that, five of the air crews were shot down in Dresden. And the pilots of the five planes were put into this punishment correction centre at Wetzlar, you know. And the cell number six was empty, and I went into cell number six, you know. Because this centre dealt not only with Air Force, but also with airborne as well. It was for both. And the German airborne were part of the Air Force. Whereas in the British Army, the airborne is part of the army. But they dealt with their own people, airmen and airborne, in the one prison, and they also used it for our people as well, you see, Americans and British as well. But on this occasion, it was the Royal Air Force there. And it is unfortunate that when the Royal Air Force bombed Dresden, they set fire to the town. And 8,000 women and children died. And many of those children, their fathers were in the SS, German SS. And they took umbrage to what had happened, you know. And on this the second day that I was in the cell, there was a commotion in cell number one. And it was obviously the occupant of cell number one was being attacked, you see. And I spoke to the RAF officer next door. I said, "What's going on?" Oh, he said, "I speak German." He said, "And when we bombed Dresden, a lot of women and children died in the flames. And these men have come to exact revenge. And they relieved the SS guard. They relieved the Luftwaffe guards and they've taken control and they're punishing the airmen. And you must tell them that you were a paratrooper and not an airman." Well, I said, "I can't do that." And they literally went through the cells punishing everybody, you know. And they really beat everyone up the living daylights. Well, they hit me so much that I couldn't get married. And when I finished with my treatment at this punishment correction centre, I went back to the prison camp, Offleg 79 at Brunswick, and I was lucky that my own doctor and padre were in the hospital. They were running the hospital there, you know, and they looked after me. When I came back to England at the end of April 1945, I spent the 6 months in hospital being patched up. And when it came to taking my discharge, the senior medical officer said to me, "Are you married?" I said, "No, I'm not." "Are you engaged?" I said, "Not yet, but I'm going to get engaged once I'm out the army." Well, he said, "You must understand," he said, "that your injuries will prevent you from ever being a father." He said, "So you may want to tell your bride that, you know." So I told the girl that that I would never be able to have a child, never be able to father a child, you see. And I said, feel free, if you wish, to sever connections with me, you know. So, oh no, she says, I wouldn't dream of doing that. But the next day she phoned and said, my parents say they want grandchildren. So that put pay to that. I then had I had three more girlfriends at different times. And when the time was right, I explained to them that I could never, they would never have children because I wasn't able to give it to them because of my injuries. And each of them sheared clear. Which brings me on to why did I go to Korea?
Please.
All right?
Can you tell me?
Yes. After I came out of the army and knew that I couldn't have children, I was rather fed up. But I studied economics, accounting, and commercial law, and I joined a Canadian firm on the road. I joined Garfield Western Setup, and I was given control of South Staffordshire, based on Lichfield. And I did that job merrily until halfway through 1949. It was then in July 1949 that I went to an airborne day at Manchester Ringway, where we had done our parachuting. And when I got there, I met the old CO of the 11th SAS. Colonel Eric Downes. But then Colonel Eric Downes had been promoted to General Sir Eric Downes, commanding the 43rd Wessex Division. Correction. Can you remove that bit?
Just corrected now.
Right. It was the 53rd Welsh Division. He commanded the 53rd Welsh Division. And he said to me, Bingley, I'm glad to meet you, he said. I've been hoping I would. You are working in Staffordshire. I said, quite right, sir. He said, at Lichfield, Staffordshire? I said, yes. He said, the very place where I have got a Territorial Brigade headquarters. The 158 Territorial Brigade. I said, oh, yes. He said, and I'm deficient of a brigade intelligence officer, and I would like you to be my brigade intelligence officer. Are you willing to join? He said, with all your war experience, he said, you'd be ideal at it. I said, it's a great honour you offer me, but you do understand that when I was discharged from the army, I was medically downgraded. I said, as you know, I got wounded again. I said, I was wounded in Dunkirk, then Sicily, then Arnhem, and I got downgraded. I said, so the army won't take me back. So he said, if you are willing to be my brigade intelligence officer, I will square your medical. So I said, if you can do that, sir, please do. And he did. And for a time, I had to undergo training as a brigade intelligence officer, which I thoroughly enjoyed. Right, we now come to the period of the end of 1951. I'd enjoyed being a brigade intelligence officer, but the time came when I had to go into hospital to have some shrapnel removed from my leg. And I was put in plaster from my ankle up to my thigh. And I had to notify the brigade major that I was not available for any training for 7 weeks. Would he give my apologies to the general? Some hours later elapsed when he phoned me up at the hospital at Stoke-on-Trent in Staffordshire, and he said, I've explained to the general that you're not available for any exercises. And he said, that is good, because he's got you a vacancy, a Staff College Camberley, to be upgraded to a Divisional Intelligence Officer. he's booked you into the Cambridge Hotel in Cambridge Hotel at Camberley, and you'll do your training, and for the 7 weeks that you're in plaster. Oh, I said, excellent, thank you. And what is more, you're going to be paid, for your rank. I said, that's fine, that's jolly useful. The 7 weeks elapsed, I'd thoroughly enjoyed the course, and I got an excellent report. So the general came to visit me. He said, I'm delighted with the result of this. I'll get your majority through as a major in the South Staffords. And I'm looking for you to be my divisional intendant's officer from now on. Oh, I said, excellent. So with that, a second general was there from MOD. And he said, one moment, General Downs. I don't want Bingley to come back to you as your divisional intendant's officer. I want him to volunteer to go to Korea to be the divisional intendant's officer in Korea. Now, I digress a bit. When General MacArthur did his sabre rattling in 1951, he wanted to drop an atom bomb on electrical works, and the Chinese got very upset about that, and so did the Americans, and he was relieved of office. And I think it was another American general, was it Ridgway Taylor?
No, General Ridgway, Matthew Ridgway.
General Matthew Ridgway went to Korea and visited the British commander and said to the British general commanding the British Commonwealth Division, the trouble with the British Army general is you've only got generals and bandsmen, you've no fighting soldiers left. And the British general said, I've never heard such utter rot in all my life. And the American said, and what is more, all your majors are old men. They're all men of 40 or over. In the American Army, a major is no more than 32 and already ready to command a battalion. You can't say that as the British Army. The British general thought hard about that, and he realized that there were a lot of very old majors in the British Army in Korea, and he weeded them all out. But they weren't sufficient majors to go and fill the vacancies. So they sifted through the territorials. And as I had just got a very good report on this upgrade as a brigade intendant's officer, divisional intendant's officer, they decided to send me. I then said to the senior general, it's a great compliment you offer me, sir, to go to Korea as a divisional intendant's officer, but you understand that I am medically downgraded, and also I am under contract to my firm to give 3 months' notice. I said, how do I overcome those two problems? He said, no problem at all. If you're willing to be mobilized by me, I'll mobilize you on Monday. I said, please go ahead and mobilize me. The Monday came, and my firm phoned me and said, we understand you are mobilized. You're back in the army for 3 years. Congratulations. We'll send one of our supervisors along to collect the company car and money and to bring you, and firm's property, and to bring you a month's wages in lieu of notice. We look forward to welcoming you back in 3 years' time. We'll keep an appointment open for you. I said, that's very kind of you. Thank you very much indeed. But things went wrong from that moment, because after I was called back into the army, I was suddenly received a message saying, before you can go to Korea, you've got to prove that you can command men. There are 60 Worcesters in Wales undergoing field firing practice. You're to go and supervise their field firing, and a report will be made on you. So I went there, and I'd got 3 days of field firing with these 60 Worcesters, and everything worked out beautifully. worked out beautifully. And I was also told, go to Mandy Barrett's Cardiff and collect winter gear. And I got to go and collect certain equipment. Now, what I didn't know was that somebody had tried to get me from the Welsh Regiment. I didn't know that, because the brigade major at Lichfield was a major in the Welsh Regiment, you know. And he said to the regiment, there's a chap, a territorial, coming to be the division lieutenant's officer. He's excellent material. He's just the sort of chap you could do within the battalion, you see. And knowing that he was going to be the next CO of the Welsh Regiment, when he finished as brigade major, he was going to command the Welsh Regiment, be the next commander. And I didn't know that, you know. And it worked very unfortunately. So I went there, completed the 3 days field firing, worked out splendidly, and then I collected my equipment. And then I was told, I thought then I would be flown out from Northolt. I was told I was going to be flown out from Northolt. And then I was given new instructions. I was told, go home for 1 day and then go to London. And I had to go to an underground railway station in London where soldiers are based prior to going overseas. And I went to this underground station, and I was given 60 Worcesters that I'd already trained, been with on the field firing. And I was now told, your instructions are, you're now going to be the draft conducting officer for 60 Worcesters to take them to Singapore. When you get to Singapore, there'll be an officer from the regiment there waiting for them. He'll take them over from you at the bridge, at the foot of the quayside at the ship, hand them over to him, and then continue your journey to Korea, to Pusan. Well, I then, so I said, very well. And with that, I collected the men and took them on the train to Southampton. And when we got on the train to Southampton, I looked after these boys for the 5 weeks, and they were marvellous chaps, really were marvellous fellas. And I duly handed them over to Singapore to their regiment. And then I got on the boat and continued to Pusan. I then went from Pusan up to Tok Chon, where divisional headquarters were. And when I got there, the brigade major said, where the devil have you been, Bingley? We've been waiting for you for 5.5 weeks. I said, heavens alive, sir. I said, I came as fast as I could. I said, I was mobilised on the Monday and on the boat on the Saturday. So he said, we know, no fault of yours. He said, there was a mess up in London somewhere. He said, and it so happened that we couldn't keep the vacancy open for you as divisional intendant's officer. We had to get a regular intendant's officer from Sweden, who come out to fill the post. We're sorry if we've got you here under forced protest, and if you wish to go back to England, we perfectly understand, you're free to do so. But we hope you will stay on. Oh, I said, I've said my goodbyes, I'd have egg on my face if I go back. Yes, please let me stay. Well, they said, we've got a regiment interested in you. The Welsh Regiment would like to have you. Oh, I said, that's very kind of them. That sounds all right. I said, yes, I'd be only too happy. They said, well, with your war trading, you'll measure up to their requirements very nice.
This is the 1st Battalion, is it?
The 1st Battalion, the Royal Regiment of Wales. 1st Battalion, the Royal Regiment of Wales. So I duly went there, and I enjoyed serving with them very much indeed. They were pleased to see me, and it was quite a fine battalion. We were only in a reserve position for about a week, when we then moved on to the main feature in Korea, which was Hill 355, known as Little Gibraltar. When we went there for the first time, we were reserve company, and we were on the rear spur of the position, and it was hard work, jolly hard work, but it was enjoyable nevertheless. And after a month, we then went and relieved A Company, who came back into reserve, and we went on the right of the centre feature of Hill 355. It was a very large feature. The company commander had, from where the flag was on the piece, plus one platoon of the Welsh Regiment under his care. He put me in charge of two platoons of the Welsh Regiment, and I had two tanks from the 5th Inniskilling Dragoon Guards. There were 8 Royal Engineers on my part of the hill, and also I'd got the 60 Royal Norfolk soldiers, who were themselves wired in separately, covering a feature called Red Spur. It was where patrols went in and out through the minefield and the wire, and it had to be very carefully covered. And there were 14 double apron fences in front of them, because that was the feature that was the weakest part of the hill that we were defending. So therefore, more effort had been made to defend it. And I was very pleased to see that I got extra pay because I got so many soldiers under my command. After I'd been there a short while, I noticed that the only people doing patrols amongst the officers were the subalterns. The subalterns were doing all the patrols, and they were meeting the enemy quite a lot. And I thought, this is very unfair to send lieutenants out doing patrols on their own, that the second in command of the companies ought to do the same. So I said to another second in command, I said, you know, I can't help feeling that we two ICs of rifle companies should go and do the patrols as well as the subalterns. And he said, I feel the same way. I said, well, let's tell the other two commanders, second in command, what we feel. And the other two, who were majors, said, oh, no. We don't do patrols. We are second in command of battalion. If anything happens to the company commander, we step into his place straight away. So we must know what's going on within our lines. What happens if we get shot on a patrol? You see, we're not here. If anything happens to the company commander. So we said, Dick and myself said, well, that's a way of looking at it, certainly. But we feel that as two ICs, we ought to do the patrol. So we did. We went and saw the adjutant and said, we want the colonel to give us permission to do patrols. And the colonel sent for us that day and said, gentlemen, thank you very much indeed for your offer. I gladly accept. I would never have asked you to do the patrol. Would never ask you at all. But as you offered, I gladly accept your invitation. And what is more, you should do the two section patrol, take two section out. You will cross the River Samoshon with two sections. After you've gone a distance, you will drop one section off with a sergeant in charge as your firm base. You go and do the ambush or the snatch. And then when you've done that snatch, come back to the firm base, and the sergeant will then get you back to our positions. You see, he said, because you'll be so exhausted. He said, because you're always going to encounter opposition. He said, because the Chinese are so thick on the ground, and you'll be so whacked that it must be the sergeant who's fresh that gets you back to our positions. And it worked very well indeed. Now, it also happened that I had got Red Spur as part of my section of the hill. And it was through Red Spur that Korean agents would cross the Samoshon, go over the first tank trap and the second tank trap to get information that was waiting for them in places like Pyongyang. You see? and they got to be got across the river. Now, it was known that I had been a division intelligence officer, so, and brigade intelligence officer, so it was decided that I was the chap with the experience to get them across the water. Now, right in front of us, previous patrols had been taken to a tree, tied a rope round the tree, a leadsman would go across, and then the investigate the ground was clear at the other side, and then he would come back when he was satisfied there were no Chinese in close proximity, and the two agents would then cross over the wire, over the rope, give him their wet shoes and socks, put on their own socks, and he would then take the shoes, the wet socks and the towel and give it to a third agent standing by the tree on the north side of the Samichon, yeah. And that worked very well. Now, I had the task a number of times of doing that. I would tie the rope, I get the third Korean to tie the rope round the tree, tie the other end round my waist, I would cross the Samichon, come to a sandy bank in the middle, then climb over that, and then cross down into the water again, get to the north of the River Samichon, and then undo my rope, do my exploration, come back, tug on the rope again, whereupon the two agents would come over, and as I've said, they would then give me their wet things, I would send them on their way, and then tug on the rope, and I'd be pulled back to the tree. I then give the rope and the wet items to the third agent. We would then go, after first light, back into our lines through the wire and the minefield, into our position, and then an Australian would come and collect the things from us, you see, and take them back. Well, now, when I realised that we were coming to the end of our tour, I took the Australian down to the tree and explained to him what I did, you see, when taking the agents over, and I, in fact, took him on my last trip for them to do it, because he would replace me when I left that hill, you know. And he would do the crossing, you see. And it's his story that's in that book, The Tall Man. So they were. So, and it's strange, because not after I showed him how we got the agents over the Samichon, that we were then troubled with the Chinese able to drop bomb shells and mortars on our main supply route. They apparently had got an observation post that had a clear view of our main supply route. And it was decided they wanted to find out where it was. So I was sent out with three radio operators and to go for 4 days to try to look for the observation post that the Chinese were using. And also, I got 11 other tasks. I got a list of 12 things to do, but the most important one would be to look for the observation post where this Chinaman was. And I got three radios. And because radios were difficult to use in Korea,